Good afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rant Show on AM 770 KTTH. We are streaming on the KTTH smartphone app. Washington Democrats got caught supporting sex offenders with a proposal that will absolutely blow your mind. That is what's trending.
What's trending? Woke madness.
The radical left, they absolutely love to claim that they support marginalized communities. It gives their lives some meaning to stand up for those in need. They pretend they've got some unearned privilege because they're white and they're almost always white. And apparently, these radicals also now view sex offenders as members of a marginalized community, which I suppose is correct. It's factual. I'm okay with them being marginalized. Call me a good person for holding that position. Now, I say radicals on the left. I'm not talking about Democrats, although they might identify as Democrats and vote for Democrats. I'm talking about the radicals within the Democrat Party. They believe that sex offenders, which include what they call minor attracted persons, are marginalized by some sort of unjust society. They've done their time. Now we have to make life easy for them. So easy that a proposal is being pushed that would get rid of community notifications. Now, the State Sex Offender Policy Board is considering recommendations that they're ultimately going to put in front of the state legislature. The board is made up of 13 members, all of them appointed by Jay Inslee, and they got a package of proposals that they've been looking at coming from some national organization of other radicals. And this is a board that is tasked with reviewing cases and then thinking about policies around sex offenders before they go into jail, as they're in jail, and after they are having done served their time, having done the time that they had to, what do we do with them now? What kind of policies should we have in place? Now, thanks to a law that was passed back in 2021 by Democrats, a law that called for equitable distribution of sex offender housing. This is what was responsible for the sex offender house that was going to go into the Tenino community under everyone's noses. No one knew that this was happening. And then all of a sudden it was getting ready to open and there was this big uproar. Well, this board has been coming up with different ways to be more quote unquote equitable when dealing with sex offenders. And some of what they're looking at, which, again, should alarm you, they're looking at sentencing ranges with an eye towards lessening them. But they're also interested in banning community notifications. Now, that's a notice you get when a sex offender is moving into your neighborhood. Now, the claim from this national organization putting forward their recommendations that are being considered by the Sex Offender Policy Board of Washington State. They say that those kinds of community notifications, quote, actually undermine public safety, the exact opposite of what lawmakers and the public so confidently assume they can accomplish. Really? They undermine public safety to tell you that there is a sex degenerate who's a felon living next door to you and your 7-year-old kid. Apparently that undermines public safety. Huh. Now, the Center Square went over this document, and it says that while sex offenses are, quote, distinctively unsettling and injurious, they argue that the policies like a sex offender registration or notifying the community of a sex offender's presence and restricting where they can live, quote, do not reduce recidivism rates. Okay, well, then keep them in jail. If they're level 3 sex offenders and you're telling us all of these rules that we have in place to mitigate the threat once they're released, okay, fine, keep them in jail. Change your sentencing guidelines. Keep them there forever then. Oh, does that make them more marginalized? Sorry, I didn't mean to stigmatize sex offenders. Sorry, Democrats on the far left. I didn't mean to upset you. Now, this draft proposal calls for, quote, reintegration, social support, stable living, and steady employment. That's the way they argue to reduce repeat offenses. Because I guess the first time around when they sexually assaulted a child. They just didn't have steady employment and they got bored. Is that what you're arguing? Now, in particular, the document states publicly available sex offender registries and community notifications, quote, rarely leads individuals to take meaningful precautions to protect themselves, adding that they create a, quote, false sense of security and divert attention from more significant sexual dangers, increasing the risk to the public. That's their argument. That you're not paying attention to other, quote, unquote, significant sexual dangers because you're spending time worrying about the sex offender who now you found out lives down the street. What are those, quote, unquote, significant sexual dangers? They don't tell us. I'm willing to bet, though, that it has something to do with soft-on-crime policies that go easy on criminals, including, I guess, sex offenders. Now, the document proposes that, quote, sex offense registries should be reserved exclusively for the use of law enforcement and community notifications should be prohibited. Why should it be used for law enforcement? I'm just curious. Why should it be used just for law enforcement if they have no, they play no role in keeping a community safe? Why would you give that to anyone then? Why would you just expunge it from their record? Finding out that your neighbor is a sex offender actually is counterproductive to keeping a community safe. Okay, then why aren't you arguing that we should just get rid of it altogether? Let's no longer even call it sex offender. This is unbelievable. This is unbelievable. And of course, as people found out about this, including Ted, who's a dad and a grandfather, which, yeah, I knew we could have figured that part out. He's a dad and a granddad, really?
Well, it's not assumed that he's a grandpa. Yeah, I understand.
You could have just said grandfather.
Well, I guess I could. He's worried about his kids and his grandkids.
He's worried about his adult kids?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay, fine.
I don't play the clip.
Okay, fine. He spoke to Como.
I have grandkids and kids that I don't want them harmed.
I've
used it before in my neighborhood. My kids didn't go around people like that. They were warned.
Oh, but I guess you should not have warned them. Actually, warning them not to go near the sex offender who's likely to recommit a sex crime against your kids, apparently that is not in their best interest or the best interest of public safety, according to these lunatics. Now, of course, they also provide other crazy things, including recommendations for a, quote, strong presumption against using GPS monitoring. Against residency restrictions and limits placed on convicted sex offenders' internet access. Yes, let's give them, you know what I think they'd really like to go? The dark web. Let's make it so that they can go there and look at child pornography. Unbelievable what people are willing to say and propose without any fear that they're going to be called out as dangerous nut jobs. Seriously. Like, remember there was a time when if you uttered something like this, you would be seen as a crazy person, that society would just completely reject you and actually look at you as dangerous. Remember those times? Let's go back to that point. Let's go back to that time, at least in this world for this conversation. Because you should not feel compelled or comfortable releasing recommendations like this. You should not be comfortable even considering recommendations like these. And now, of course, the Sex Offender Policy Board is on the defense. They're saying, no, hold on, hold your horses. We're just looking at proposals. That's all it is. Relax. Not that big of a deal, as you know, especially when we're able to make decisions that you don't find out about. We never do crazy things. We're always on the up and up. It's all good. Here's Brad Merrihew with the Sex Offender Policy Board.
We include a lot of research that's on both sides of the issue for us to look
both
at.
Both sides of the sex offender
Not because we were going to adopt those proposals.
You know, look, we look at some proposals that call out sex offenders, and then we look at some others that, you know, that have a more inclusive view of sex offenders, more, you know, supportive of the sex offender community. You got to see both sides of the issue.
You don't want to stigmatize.
No, you can't stigmatize. Hey, stop criminalizing sex you know what I mean? I mean, that's basically what they're arguing here, and they're using the same kind of language that they use when they're talking about all the other left-wing ideals that they have, they see nothing wrong with this. And they hope to never get caught. And then when they do get caught, they come out and they speak to Como News. Oh, don't worry, all is well.
There's a great deal of support for community notification on our board, and I would be shocked if any proposals to limit that or in any way diminish that were successful.
I would be shocked to find out, for example, if under the leadership of Inslee and Washington State Democrats, we would release some sex offenders from McNeil Island and put them in a home in Tenino that's not properly secured and very close to children. I would be shocked. Oh, that happened? Well, consider me shocked. I cannot believe that that would happen. Next thing you're going to tell me, they're going into Yelm or Enumclaw. Oh, wait,
that already happened.
Sorry, my bad. I guess, hey, consider me shocked for a second time. I would be shocked. Now, of course, they're hoping this goes away. It shouldn't, because that Tenino story is an example of how they've already essentially been doing that. No one knew in Tenino that they were planning this until finally the sheriff called it out, Derek Sanders. He found out about this, then some community groups found out, and they raised a stink. And by the way, after they raised the stink, what did we get from the Department of Corrections and the Inslee administration? A meeting trying to convince you, don't worry, it's fine. Who wouldn't want to live next to a sex offender? Especially when you have kids. When you are not paying attention, things like this happen. Let's all do a quick poll by a show of hands. Did you know that there was a Washington Sex Offender Policy Board? I didn't.
I did not.
There's not a single person, unless maybe Mary Hugh is listening, there's not a single person who knew that this board existed. So how do we stop boards like this from implementing recommendations like the ones we went through if we don't even know they exist? Someone in the know leaked this, and then it got published in, I think, first with Ari in the post-millennial, then the Center Square picked it up, and now Como's picking it up. We were going to do it yesterday, and then, of course, I forgot. I had a note on my phone that said, talk about sex offenders. In retrospect, was not the right note.
Did that get flagged by Apple or something?
I've been asked by my attorneys not to speak of that. But if you don't know what's happening, which is oftentimes the case, on all sorts of issues, including stuff that's not being done on the DL like this, right? There are meetings that happen all the time that, yeah, if you found the one website deep within the website, and the subsection of a subsection of a subsection that shows you the schedule, you would find out about some of these things. And they're covering very important issues on all sorts of different topics. And too few actually know about it. Now, the hardcore activists, they'll find out about it. Sometimes that's great. Sometimes it's not so great. It was great in this case with Kathy Dahlquist, who spoke at this meeting that they had on September 21st when none of us knew it was happening. And she called it out.
The proposed recommendations on the issue of sex trafficking not only curtail the liability of traffickers, but it also eradicates any accountability for those who purchase and exploit victims for their personal gratification, as well as third parties who knowingly profit from this exploitation. These revisions would not only disregard the suffering of victims of these heinous crimes, but it also opens the doors for those previously convicted to operate covertly, continually their exploitation of vulnerable individuals.
Does that freak you out just a little bit? Just a little bit? It should. But what should freak you out more is that you're only finding out about the existence of this particular board and set of recommendations. You just found out about it within the last day or so. That should scare you more, because what do you think else is happening that you're unaware of? Just thinking about that should freak you out. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
A bunch of people in the Seward Park neighborhood of Seattle had their car tires slashed yesterday early in the morning. Started Sunday overnight, but went into Monday early a.m. In fact, surveillance captured some of what this individual did. It looks like a guy. Can't quite tell. It kind of carries himself.
Hard
like
to
a
say
man.
These days.
Yeah, no kidding. He was in either a white or gray sweatshirt. It's kind of hard to tell the color just because it's a night cam. But he had something in his hand. I'm assuming it was a knife, some sharp tool, and he was clearly going up to cars, and he was just seemingly at random slicing through tires. And people who live there, like Becky, spoke with Cairo 7 TV. They're obviously alarmed.
He's hitting every single car as he walks down. He didn't miss anything. He's crossing the street. He's hitting every single car. I think there's more like at least 50 cars by all the communication we've been looking at, the next door, group chats.
Now, so far, no suspect has been caught. Obviously, a lot of people are aware of it. There was some speculation in this piece that, based upon how many people were complaining on sites like Nextdoor and whatnot, they said some 50 people ended up having their tires slashed by this person. So now they're on the lookout.
So around 9:20, 9:30 p.m., my husband came outside and he heard a hissing sound. And he looked down and he's like, where is that noise coming from? And he noticed it was coming from one of my tires. The main question was like, oh my gosh, I have to get my kids to school tomorrow. Fortunately, we do have another car, so we just swapped out the car seats. But I was like, who else did this happen to? Was it targeted? Was this about me? And how much is this going to cost?
Yeah, probably a lot. I mean, in fairness, I haven't looked at the latest numbers on inflation and the Bidenomic effect on tires, but tires are already kind of expensive. And so probably a little bit more expensive now. You're going to have to cover that. Meanwhile, you're wondering whether or not this guy's going to strike again. You're wondering who the heck this guy is. Is it a crazy environmentalist? Is it a homeless person? It again, looked like an adult. Couldn't tell whether or not this person was homeless based upon how he was dressed. Could be just a wacko, right? Who's just a crazy person who just decided to do this. We don't know. But we live in a city, unfortunately, where, again, not really shocked that this happened. I can't say that I'm shocked. I can't say that I'm not going to honestly expect that something like this will happen again over the coming days. I think there was a story last week while I was gone where it happened to Seattle Fire Department staff, medics, firefighters, outside of one of the fire stations. Now, that seems like that was obviously targeted. Was this targeted to maybe a neighborhood for some? I don't know. But we'll find out, hopefully. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? National.
Congressman Henry Cuellar, the Democrat from Texas, he was carjacked last night in D.C. It happened in the Navy Yard area of D.C. It's about a mile away from the Capitol. Now, somehow, he managed to get out of this unharmed. He was actually quite lucky. He spoke with MSNBC.
I was coming in from the Capitol. I parked in front of my apartment complex, and when I was getting up, three guys came up with guns. I quickly analyzed the situation. I got a black belt in karate, so you got to learn what to do.
Okay, we don't need you to brag about that, man. We got it. Oh, look at me, I'm tough. Well, I'm armed. How about that? I don't have to know karate because I've got a handgun on me. How about that?
Take it easy. Well, you didn't make that very clear.
Well, what am I pointing at you? Nothing.
I looked to the left. Somebody had a gun. To the right, somebody had a gun. I had a third guy behind me. You got to stay calm. So I went ahead and gave them the car keys, and they took off. Within a couple hours, they were able to recover my phone, my car. Everything got returned. I want to thank the Capitol Police and the Metro Police for doing their job. And that's one of the reasons why I support law enforcement, because they really do a good job.
They do a good job. Unfortunately, you come from a party that hates cops. You got loud voices within your party, especially within the progressive base, that just absolutely loathe cops and have done everything that they can to ensure that they get out of the profession, because they like to pretend that all cops are, well, fill in the blank, ACAB. We've all heard it over and over and over again. And that was something that was coming from radicals on your side. Not on my side. That was happening on your side. And too few members of Congress said anything during the most rabid of attacks against police officers after George Floyd. Now, I can't remember whether or not Henry Cuellar was one of them, because he is at least a moderate Democrat. But if I can't recall any Democrat who really pushed back in a meaningful way, then I'm going to guess he didn't push back in a meaningful way.
And I looked at one that had a ski mask. You can tell there were young folks. I mean, I hate saying this, but there were young punks with guns.
Yeah, they were young punks with guns. Why do you hate to say that? Why do you hate to say that? Oh, maybe you regret the policy decisions that your party has made. And I don't mean to be tough on Cuellar, because he actually does happen to be a moderate Democrat who we can respect. We might disagree from time to time on some significant issues, but he at least comes at these stories of these issues in good faith. He has been one of the only Democrats who's been consistently calling for the border to be shut down. And it didn't take years for him to come to that decision, to make those protestations about what was going on at the border. But he's from a party that is responsible for the rise in crime that we have seen, particularly when it comes to youth. That's on him and his party, because he has not been a leader on this issue. I'm glad he's okay. I was asked today, I was on Laura Ingraham's podcast, and she asked me about the story and said, after something like this, will anything change? I said, no, probably not. We're dealing with people who are like members of a cult. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show, this hour brought to you by American Water Damage Restoration. When we come back, a lot of drama in D.C. McCarthy is out as House Speaker. Matt Gaetz is now seen as public enemy number one to a large group of Republicans in the House. We'll tell you all about it and what it all means when we come back on The Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to The Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy should become a podcast subscriber. He's going to have a lot more time on his hands now that we no longer call him House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. He's now just Congressman Kevin McCarthy. He is no longer the House Speaker after Matt Gaetz, congressman from Florida, a childish bully, in my view, one looking to impress Newsmax. So once he's out of office, they'll give him his own show. He's now filling in over at Newsmax. He moved to vacate the chair because Kevin McCarthy didn't give in to a small group of recalcitrant Republican demands. I was watching The Five earlier, and Greg Gutfeld was going through some of the so-called broken promises, and there wasn't a single one that the average person would find meaningful in any way, shape, or form. On this, Gaetz is 100% in the wrong. Not because of substance of arguments. Push that aside for a moment. His comments and positions around spending is one that is shared by the vast majority of Republicans. We spend too much. We should spend less. Yeah, we got it. He is wrong on the timing of this. Something that McCarthy, before this motion to vacate, said was going to eventually happen. Here he is.
You know, if I counted how many times someone wanted to knock me out, I would have been gone a long time ago.
So yes.
Can you explain a little bit about why do it today? I mean, the idea that you...
Why not?
Rip the Band-Aid off here, or what?
Well, why not? You know, look, I think Matt has planned this all along. It didn't matter what we transpired. You know, he would have done it if we were in shutdown or not. I firmly believe it's the right decision to keep government open, to make sure our military is still paid, our border agents are still paid. And if that makes a challenge based upon whether I should be speaker, I'll take that fight.
So you're calling his bluff?
Yeah.
Well, that was a mistake. That was clearly a mistake. Now, Republicans, all but seven, sided with McCarthy. A very small group of Republicans joined Democrats in creating this chaos. And it will be chaotic. Not quite to the level that some will claim, but without a House Speaker going into this, now what is it, 42 days left? As they negotiate appropriation bills, which who knows how that's going to unravel or unfold at this point, because you don't have a Speaker. there's going to be some level of chaos. So who exactly benefits from this? Well, I can tell you Democrats do. But Matt Gaetz says you do. We all do.
People have called you a narcissist. People say that is to your benefit alone. Is it to the benefit of you and to Donald Trump?
It's the benefit of this country that we have a better Speaker of the House than Kevin McCarthy. Kevin McCarthy couldn't keep his word. He made an agreement in January regarding the way Washington would work, and he violated that agreement.
An agreement that was decided when you weren't in the room and something that you were making demands on. The Congress is more than one person. The party is more than one person. And even if, again, even if you think he's doing the right thing, understand the second that he made the motion to vacate, he sent out a campaign email trying to raise funds off of this. But then he'll tell us that he's doing it for the American people. He's doing it for us. He's not doing this for us. We don't benefit from this. We're not going to benefit as a result of this. All what's going to happen is that the media will be hyper-focused on this, ignoring a pretty significant story that came out today, a poll that came out today. Gallup came out and said in the highest number in history for Republicans, going all the way back into the early 90s, late 80s, Republicans have a commanding lead when it comes to the economy, which is the number one issue people vote on when it comes to presidential elections. And now all they're going to be hearing is that, yeah, I know you trust them on the economy, but did you see, look how incompetent they are. Look at all the infighting. And, you know, you had that one reporter asking Matt Gaetz about whether or not this benefits Donald Trump. This doesn't benefit Donald Trump. It doesn't benefit him at all. In fact, he was the person who today called all of this out. He posted on Truth Social. Why is it that Republicans are always fighting among themselves? Why aren't they fighting the radical left Democrats who are destroying our country? That is a very reasonable question to ask. You have a slim majority in the House, a very slim majority. And we allowed a very small group of Republicans to dictate the terms for every member of Congress, for every Republican. That is wrong. There was no real meaningful debate. This was a party that today was held hostage. Even if you agree with what he did, the way he did it was wrong, and it didn't have to happen now. If you're going to do this, do it after the election. Don't do it at this point when all things are in our favor against Joe Biden and the radical Democrats. We've given Democrats a win. And we don't know who's going to be the next speaker. Now, Gaetz is a fan of Steve Scalise.
Well, you know, the stages of grief, I think, are in progress right now with some of my colleagues. I think there was a stage of denial, and I've certainly experienced a good amount of their anger. And now we appear to be headed toward bargaining. I think the world of Steve Scalise, I think he'd make a phenomenal speaker.
And he said he doesn't want the job. Now, maybe that changes. Maybe he said that because of his position under Kevin McCarthy. I don't know. I think most people do, in fact, like Steve Scalise. But you're not going to get anything remarkably different. And this idea that they've lowered the threshold, and Matt Gaetz was asked this specifically, would he back anyone who wouldn't lower the threshold to offer a motion to vacate to just one? He said no, because he wants the power. He's power hungry. We shouldn't be comfortable with any member of Congress having that much power over the speakership, over any policy. The same way we would be up in arms if it was a small group of Democrats holding this country hostage because they wanted to defund the police even more. We'd be calling that out. We would be saying that's abusive. We would be saying, why are we giving so much power to the squad? There's only six members. Why would we give them that kind of power? We would all be upset. The way he did it was wrong. It's very clearly wrong. And it's why the vast majority of the Republicans said so, including Republicans who have not been huge fans of Kevin McCarthy. You had Nancy Mace, who was seen as a surprise vote to vacate. She's a more moderate-ish Republican. And she basically said the reason why she did this was because Kevin McCarthy violated his promise to work with her on gun control and quote-unquote women's rights issues. So you're mad that he didn't want to further restrict guns? As a Republican, that's what makes you upset? What were the women's rights issues? Access to abortion, that's what you're upset with? He didn't work with you to give more access to abortion? Did you actually expect that to happen? It's absurd. And it also points to this, let's just call it an evolution of Matt Gaetz, who previously said we should not be kicking Paul Ryan from the speakership. We should do what we can to keep this party united. He said that with Kennedy on Fox Business.
If we take Paul Ryan off the field right now, instead of being able to finish strong in the 115th Congress, we will shatter into a bunch of factions fighting against each other for power. We got enough of that in Washington already.
And that was from 2018. All of a sudden, I guess he's okay with fighting for power, getting that attention, getting the money that he's going to raise. There are some people within sort of the Trump world that very clearly took advantage of their access to Donald Trump and his fan base in order to take money from you, hawk whatever it is they're hawking, trying to get their show on America's First Network or whatever that thing is. That's exactly what Matt Gaetz is doing right now. And people are allowing him to get away with it. Meanwhile, we don't benefit at all as Americans. In fact, we might end up getting hurt as a party, which hurts the American people because then it gives a benefit to the radical left that's been going after our police, that's been going after sane drug policy. That's the group that just won today. So congratulations, Matt. 1-800-465-8770 for your text messages. 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.
YourDigital.com today.
Welcome back to The Jason Rant Show on AM 770 KTTH. We have a new Republican candidate entering the race for Congress in Washington's 3rd Congressional District. Her name is Leslie LeWallen. She is a council member with the Camas City Council. She's a former King County prosecutor. She's a mother of four, who understands what's happening in her district, in certain parts of the district, tends to spread. And she understands that she's certainly not best represented by the Democrat, who's very far to the left, who was able to defeat Republican Joe Kent in this last election. She now joins me. Leslie, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Jason. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I gave a little bit of your background, but how would you describe just your general political philosophy?
So I'm a lifelong Republican. I have three published law review articles on core conservative values, limited government, property rights, legislative intent. When I'm faced with questions or votes before city council, I ask myself two questions always. One, is this a problem for the government to solve? And two, what are the unintended consequences of that decision? And so that's kind of my approach to everything, because while some pieces of legislation might look good on paper, the unintended consequences usually create more problems than they actually solve. So that's generally my philosophy. I'm a law and order individual, limited government, and just a lifelong Republican.
Why'd you decide to run? You got Joe Kent, who made his announcement months ago. He obviously was the last candidate who made it to the general. It was an upset just looking Democrat versus Republican in the district. He did end up losing. I imagine that was the reason why you decided to run.
Yeah, we lost. We lost a seat we should never have lost. And we now have a razor thin majority in the House of Representatives. And we can see what having a razor thin majority can create. A situation like today, a situation with the debt ceiling, a situation with a possible government shutdown. So, we lost a seat that we should not have lost. The district is a Republican district, plus seven. Tiffany Smiley won by, I think, 10,000 votes down here. All the other Republicans outperformed Joe Kent on the ticket. I've heard all the different narratives, but at the end of the day, he lost, and we should never have lost the seat.
Why do you think he lost?
Why do I think he lost? I think there's a number of reasons. I mean, I think that when you attack a Republican incumbent, you have to pivot and you have to go really far to one extreme. And I don't know that he was able to garner the majority of Republicans in the district. So when you look at just the primary itself in 2022, he received 22% of the Republican vote, which left 42% of Republicans wanting an alternative, whether that was Jamie Herrera Butler, Heidi St. John, or Vicky Kraft. People, I think, went to the general election, some holding their nose, and some we lost. I think we lost a number of Republicans who voted for Marie Perez in the end, because as the last television ad that went out in the last election cycle said, they were lifelong Republicans who just felt that he was too extreme for them.
What makes you think this time will be different in the primary, where he won't be able to consolidate his base of supporters against other conservatives, basically splitting the vote and then getting into the general?
Because I talk to people all day long and make lots of phone calls. I knocked on 5,000 doors when I was campaigning for Camas City Council. I just don't see how he is going to pivot and switch his brand this late in the game. I haven't seen him attempt to at this point. I don't know how he intends to get the Jamie Herrera Butler voters, how he intends to get the Heidi St. John voters, and how he intends to get the Vicky Kraft voters. I think that, if anything, he polarized the vote down here in Southwest Washington even more. And so I think that while he has a base, I don't see that base has really changed at all. And frankly, those were the numbers that I was looking at when I decided to jump into this race, because we cannot afford to lose that seat again. If we lose it, we could lose it forever. We could lose the majority in the House of Representatives. And frankly, we can continue to lose the America that we love. I mean, we live right across the Columbia River from Portland. That's how close we are. We're basically a, you know, bedroom community of Portland. And every single solitary thing that has occurred in Portland, from the homelessness and the crime and the drugs, that's what nobody wants coming across this river. And there's, you know, it's mission critical. We have to win that seat back, or we will. We'll become just like Portland. Everything's just going to come right across the river. And that's exactly the number one thing that every constituent, at least when I was door knocking in Camas, said, we don't want to become like Portland. Nobody does. I mean, Nike just closed down in Portland.
Yep.
Target closed in Portland. I've sat on two rounds of police chief interviews for the police chief of Camas. I would say over 60 or 70% of those applicants were all law enforcement officers wanting to get out of Portland and have a better life and work in a safer community.
So let's put you in the Congress today. You were there.
Okay.
Let's just put you there. Mm-hmm. How would you have voted with on the Kevin McCarthy issue, the motion to vacate? He has since lost. He's no longer the speaker. How would you have voted?
I would have stood with Speaker McCarthy. I mean, I think this entire thing is a mess. First, this isn't helping the people of Southwest Washington, and this isn't helping the American people. I mean, we voted for these representatives to get in there and do the work of the people, and all I see is a bunch of party politics being played out. I mean, Matt Gaetz is Joe Kent's best friend. He's to blame for all of this mess today, and Marie Perez isn't doing anything to fix it. Frankly, you know, while they're fighting over speaker, we've got fentanyl coming across the border. We've got, you know, record of illegal immigrants coming across the border. We have a homeless crisis. We have a crime crisis. We have a drug use crisis. And I really, you know, none of this game of charades does anything to help the American people.
Now, I am Matt. And by the way, we're talking with Leslie Llewellyn. She's running for 3rd Congressional District as the Republican, is hoping to defeat Joe Kent to take on Marie Glusenkamp-Perez, the current incumbent, who's very, very far to the left. I imagine there's not a ton different between you and Kent on border security in a general sense. But I am wondering, when it comes to funding to Ukraine, which was a key part of some of the disagreements with this last sort of debt ceiling debate, where do you stand? Should we be continuing to send the amount of aid to Ukraine that we currently are? Should it be tied to border spending? How do you see this issue?
So, you know, America is the beacon of freedom. You know, we're that shining city on the hill. Everybody looks to us for freedom and democracy, and we need to keep our friends and our allies. We entered into an agreement in 1994, the Budapest Agreement. We need to make sure that we keep our word. I think that's really important to keep our word. We need to be America first, but not America alone. Mm-hmm. We need to have transparency and accountability. But look, I mean, there's if we're waving the white flag at Putin, then we're giving the green light to a lot of other bad actors out in this world who might see that as an opportunity to go and invade Taiwan or other countries. And that doesn't make any one of us safe domestically.
Would you tie funding to the border? Meaning in this case, the debate is between whether or not you give unilaterally to Ukraine and then deal with the border at some other time, or do you commit at the same time, we're going to give whatever the funding is to Ukraine, but we're also going to give funding to the border to make sure that it's secure?
I think that you can do both at the same time. I don't think that they should be mutually exclusive. I think our number one domestic criteria, and it's global criteria too, is to secure the border. That would be my number one goal in Congress, is to secure the border. I think that Ukraine is a little bit more nuanced of an approach. Mm-hmm. And I think that we need to keep our agreement, but we also need transparency and accountability. We need to set strong metrics. What are we trying to accomplish? What is the end goal? What is the time frame? And work with our friends and our allies to make sure that we are not unnecessarily spending an excessive amount of money or staying too long in a war that maybe we should reconsider or work with our allies. But like I said, I think that they are not mutually exclusive.
Well, there you go. Again, we've been talking with Leslie Llewellyn. Her website, leslieforwashington.com. It's all spelled out, leslieforwashington.com. We wish you the best of luck, and I'm sure we'll have another conversation with you in the coming weeks. Thank you so much for stopping by.
All right. Thanks, Jason. All right. Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Jason Rant Show, 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text.